Dragnet.
The Jack Benny Program.
I'm that man. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
George Burns and Gracie Allen.
Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum.
We offer you Escape.
Our Miss Brooks. Suspense.
Richard Diamond, Private Detective.
Fibber McGee and Molly.
The Great Gildersleeve.
Yeah. Radio Theater.
In the air.
Dedicated to man's imagination, the theater of the mind.
You know what our call letters WGN stand for, don't you?
WGN Radio Theater.
The special three-hour presentation.
With Carl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right, a little after 11 p.m. here, about 9 minutes after 11, on the WGN Radio Theater program 322 in the series. It's September 29th, 2018. It's a Saturday night, and to my right, the vivacious Lisa Wolf. What's up, Lisa?
Hey, Carl.
Good to see you.
Thank you. Good to see you as well.
You see what we have on the agenda tonight?
We have my favorite.
Yes, my favorite husband.
That's right.
Your favorite show is my favorite husband.
It's a goodie.
Lucille Ball. Then it's Tales of the Texas Rangers with Joel McRae. And then Dr. Christian going way back to 1937. It's all brought to you by Cat's Pride. And what is the movie?
The movie is Roman Holiday from 1953.
Because we're playing Crack the Quote. Roman Holiday,
1953. Have you heard of that with Gregory Peck and Audrey Hepburn?
I don't think I've ever seen this movie.
I haven't seen it either.
Wow. All right. So it's going to be a total shot in the dark.
Good. That's
what do they win?
They're going to win two tickets to see Edge of Life at the Athenaeum Theater.
At the what?
Athenaeum Theater.
What?
Athenaeum.
That's hard to say.
You know, I did an opera there when I was in that opera Persuasion.
I don't know the Jane Austen thing.
You were at an opera, Persuasion? Mm-hmm. It was at the Athenaeum
Crystal
Theater.
Crystal Blue Persuasion.
Yeah, I wasn't meant for the, to be in an opera, but I gave it my best.
Is that how you did it?
Just something just like that.
All right, call us, be the what caller?
Oh, we're going to take the fourth caller.
Fourth caller, 312-981-7200. Play the game with us. We'll be right back.
It's time now for Crack the Quote, brought to you by Cat's Pride.
We have Glenn on the line. Hey, Glenn.
Hey, Lisa. Hey, Carl.
Hi, how Glenn. Good. How are you?
So good. We're so glad you made it through. We're looking forward to playing with you.
Oh, good. Good. I'm ready.
Terrific. The movie is Roman Holiday. I've got three quotes. You just tell me which is the right one from the movie. Here we go. Number one, live dangerously, take the whole day. Number two, the edge. There is no honest way to explain it. Number three, I'm quite classic with an edge.
I'm going to try number two.
All
yeah,
right.
Yeah, I'm going to agree
you like
with
that one. The edge.
Like
there's
it.
No honest way to explain it. Let's hear it.
Live dangerously. Take the whole day.
All right. Nah. So you agreed, but it wasn't the right one. But
it sounded
it's okay.
like it's, who said that? Was that Gregory Peck right there?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I don't remember. Yeah. I did this.
Voice
like
sounded familiar.
It probably. But you know what? It doesn't matter, Glenn. You are the winner. You've won two tickets to The Edge of Life. And what theater is it at, Carl?
Hamanaha.
Come on. What's
theater?
The name of the theater?
I don't know.
It's the Athenaeum.
Athenaeum.
It's the Athenaeum. It's
did
on
I say
Southport.
It right?
You
Athenaeum
did.
Theater?
Yeah.
Okay.
So, you know what?
It's not that hard to say.
You
actually.
Know, this is a real drama. It's about the issues surrounding what it might mean to die with dignity. It's supposed to be a great show. It hasn't opened yet. It runs October 11th through November 3rd. You can get tickets at athenaeumtheater.org. Thank you so much for playing. You were so close.
All right, thank you.
Take care.
Thanks, Glenn. All right, folks, we have a text in line. It's 312-981-7200. We love getting your texts. You can text us all the way till 2 a.m. We'll be here till then. And then tomorrow night we'll be back here for another 2 hours, not 3 hours, unfortunately, 2 hours on Sunday, 3 hours on Saturday. We have more classic radio shows for you. But right now, it's time for Lisa's favorite classic radio show, My Favorite Husband.
And it's Liz's birthday, and I always like a birthday.
Whose birthday is
Liz
it?
Liz Cougat, right?
Liz Cougat. Oh, yeah. Liz, that's the... Okay. You had me all
you're talking about My Favorite
there.
Husband is
right.
My
well,
favorite
you know,
show.
It's actually Cougat, but you know what? They changed the name from Cougat to Cooper a little later in the show because of Xavier Cougat. And he was not happy about them using his last name, you know, the band leader, Xavier Cugat. So they changed it to not have the confusion there.
So is this when she's a Cooper?
I think she's Cooper. I think she's Cooper on this one.
We're
going to
listen and find out.
Yeah. All right. So Lucille Ball, Richard Denning star as Liz and George Cooper, a married couple billed as two people who live together and like it, was originally sponsored by Jell-O, came to radio in 1948. And when Ball refused to transition this show to television, CBS said, hey, let's do this show on TV. She said, okay, I'll do it, but only if I bring my real-life husband, Desi Arnaz.
Yeah, she knew better, I'll tell you that.
And they were like, uh-uh. So they did take this show and put it on TV, but they had Joan Caulfield and Barry Nelson, and then Lucille Ball went with the writer, Jess Oppenheimer, and they kind of retooled it and came up with a different show called
I Love Lucy.
I Love Lucy. And the rest is TV history. So this is right. It's Lucille Ball's, or actually Lucille Ball's character's birthday on this episode. November 25th, 1950. Here's part one of My Favorite Husband.
It's time for My Favorite Husband, starring Lucille Ball.
Jell-O, everybody.
Yes, it's the Gay Family Series starring Lucille Ball with Richard Denning. Transcribed and brought to you by the Jell-O family of Red Letter Desserts.
Oh, the big red letters stand for the Jell-O family. Oh, the big red letters stand for the Jell-O family. That's Jell-O.
Yum, yum, yum.
Jell-O puddings.
Yum, yum, yum.
Jell-O tapioca puddings. Yes, sirree.
And now Lucille Ball with Richard Denning as Liz and George Cooper. Two people who live together and like it. As we look in on the Coopers, it's morning, and we find Katie, the maid, in the kitchen. Liz Cooper is just coming into the room.
Good morning, Katie.
Good morning, Mrs. Cooper. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you.
Hold it, Katie. This is not my birthday.
It isn't?
No.
Oh, dear, and I already put a candle in your grapefruit.
Too bad.
I can't understand how I made that mistake. When is your birthday, anyway?
Never.
Huh?
I had my last birthday a year ago today.
Oh, you've reached that point, huh?
It's awful. I never realized it, Katie. Today I'm 33. That's more than halfway to 35. I'm practically 40.
I know. Well, if you aren't going to celebrate, I better not bake you cake.
I should say not. I don't want anything to even remind me that it's my birthday.
All right.
What can I do about George?
What do you mean?
How can I possibly keep him from remembering it's my birthday?
Well, just don't tell him.
Katie, that's mean. Why, my birthday is the most important day in the year to George.
Liz, where are you, honey?
I'm out here in the kitchen, dear. You just watch the fuss he makes.
Oh, there you are. I've been looking all over the house for you.
You have, my little husband. What for?
You know what day this is, don't you?
Why, no. What day is it?
It's Saturday. I told you to call a plumber last Wednesday. The bathroom basin has stopped up again.
Ew. Is there anything else?
No. Oh, yes.
What?
I'm late for the bank. I'll just skip breakfast. Goodbye, dear.
Oh, George?
Yes, dear? Katie, how can I hear Liz with you making all that racket?
Sorry.
What is it, Liz? I'm in a hurry.
Nothing.
Oh, well, goodbye, dear.
Bye.
Oh, there, Mrs. Cooper.
George didn't give me any presents or flowers. He didn't even remember my birthday.
But, Mrs. Cooper, you said you didn't want him to remember.
I didn't. I wanted him to forget about my birthday. But he forgot about my birthday.
Thank you.
Mrs. Cooper, you've been crying for an hour now. That won't help any.
He doesn't love me anymore.
Mrs. Cooper, a husband forgetting his wife's birthday is absolutely normal.
It is?
It's a male characteristic, like baldness and egotism.
So what?
Well, a smart wife always drops a hint at least 3 shopping days before her birthday.
Well, it's too late for me to do that with George. I know. I'll call up Mr. Atterbury and drop a hint, and then he'll mention it to George.
Good idea.
Now, how can I just hint at it? I know. I'll tell...
Sheridan Falls First National Bank.
Mr. Atterbury, please.
One moment.
Hello?
Happy birthday to me, happy birthday to me, happy birthday to a close relative of your handsome aunt, Vice President. Happy birthday to me.
Hello? Hello? I think we have a bad connection.
Happy birthday to me, happy birthday to
me. I heard that.
Good. Well, goodbye.
There, that ought to do it.
Did you send for me, Mr. Atterbury?
Yes, George boy. I just had the weirdest phone call.
Who was it?
I don't know.
Well, was it a man or a woman?
I don't know. It sounded something like this.
Happy birthday to me, happy birthday to me, happy birthday to a close relative of your handsome blonde vice president, happy birthday to me.
A close relative of mine? Oh, gee, I wonder who it can be.
Do you have any relatives who come from Mars?
No. And it isn't Liz's birthday.
Are you sure?
Oh, I know Liz. If it was her birthday, she'd never have let me out of the house without telling me.
True.
Yeah, besides, Liz's birthday is June the 3rd. Or is it February the 8th? Or is that our wedding anniversary? Well, I know they're both in the spring sometime. Close relative. How did that voice sound again?
Happy birthday to me!
Of course, Mother!
Mother? Your mother would pull a trick like that?
Yeah, she gets pretty cute sometimes.
Oh, cute, cute.
Well, I'm glad she called. I'll have to run out and buy her something and arrange a little surprise party for her.
Go ahead, boy.
I'll be in Miller's department store if you want me. Pardon me, miss. Will you wait on me?
Yes, sir. And, oh, hello, Mr. Cooper.
What?
I remember you from the other day when you were here with your wife. She was looking at coats and you were looking at prices.
Oh, yes. I'd like to buy a little birthday present and have it sent out to the house.
Certainly. What would you like?
Well, it's hard to decide, but I think a nightgown would be nice.
Yes, sir. I suppose you want something sheer and lacy and invitingly feminine.
Well, no, I think you'd better make it long flannel.
Yeah. You've been married quite a while, haven't you?
What?
Nothing. I've got just the thing, Mr. Cooper. I'll send it out this afternoon. Do you want to put a card in?
Yes. Do you have one?
Uh-huh. They're on the desk.
Okay. Just send it out this afternoon. Oh, by the way, do you have a bakery in the store?
Bakery? No.
Oh, that's a shame. Yeah, here's the card.
Mm.
Well, I'd better get going. I have to find a cake that will hold 65 candles. So long.
Bye. 65 candles. Long flannel nightgown. Ha! I only hope I look that good at her age.
Come in.
Hi, Mr. Atterbury.
Liz girl, come in. What brings you to the bank?
Oh, nothing special. I just wanted to know if George got a certain message.
A certain message?
Happy birthday to me. Happy birthday to me.
Oh, of course, of course. You called and I gave George the message, and he ran right out to buy some presents for your dad.
What's wrong?
Well, I thought that George said that we decided when he was... You would... Wrong? Nothing's wrong.
Well, I guess I wasn't very subtle. What did George say when you told him?
He knew it all the time. Oh. He's out buying some presents right now.
Oh, isn't he sweet?
Yes. Well, goodbye.
I'll see you later.
Goodbye.
I'm going. Don't push me.
Sorry. Well, happy birthday.
Thank you. Goodbye.
Bye. Whew. Now to alert George, boy. Let's see. Where did he go? Oh, Miller's department store. I hope he's still there. Hello? Miller's department store? It's very important that I locate George Cooper. He's there and I... No. Cooper. C-O-O-P-E... No. P, like an ape. A-P-E. No, A. Like an appetite. A-P-P. No, P. That's right, like in Cooper. George Cooper. See if you can locate him right away. This is a matter of wife or death. I don't care if you get it or not. Find him right away. Well, it's to be hoped that something happens with real speed to save the day in the Cooper family. Speed. Speed. Now, what does that word make me think? I've got it. The new speedy way to prepare Jell-O and get a beautiful finished Jell-O dessert in just about 1 hour. Here's what you do. Dissolve Jell-O in 1 cup of hot water. Then add 1 cup of ice cubes or crushed ice and fill up the cup with water. Stir until the ice melts completely. Pop into the refrigerator to chill until firm. And in just about 1 fleeting hour, you take out a glorious, glamorous Jell-O dessert. This new quick-setting Jell-O idea is a real godsend for the busy holiday season. And no matter which of those 6 delicious Jell-O flavors you choose, you always get a winner. Strawberry, raspberry, cherry, orange, lemon, and lime. So look for those big red letters on the box. They spell Jell-O, a registered trademark of General Foods that stands for Red Letter Desserts.
J-E-L-L-O.
What's your favorite Jell-O flavor, Lisa?
I don't like Jell-O.
Why?
It's just...
Jell-O's good.
I don't like gelatin.
Yeah?
I know this sounds crazy. I think that gelatin is made from, like, animal hoofs.
It could be. That might also be like a wives' tale or something like that.
It could be, but it's not in my vegetarian...
I think Jell-O is good, especially like the strawberry Jell-O. I like strawberry Jell-O.
If I was going to have it, which I wouldn't, I would choose the cherry.
You know what's...
But I won't eat it because I think it's made from animal hooves.
I don't think so.
I think it is.
But here's
the thing. You guys let me know.
Strawberry,
I think it is.
Here's the thing. Strawberry Jell-O with some whipped cream. Ooh, good stuff.
Yeah, I don't like whipped cream either. Sorry.
What a party pooper.
And my birthday's around the corner, so no whipped cream.
All right, let's take a quick...
You are no fun.
I know,
I am. She doesn't like whipped cream. She doesn't like Jell-O.
No.
All right, let's take a quick break. More after these words.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
So, Carl, I did my research, and there's a good reason I don't eat Jell-O. And here I'm going to clarify it for you. So, gelatin is made by prolonged boiling of skin, cartilage, and bones from animals. It's made primarily from the stuff that meat industries have left over, like pork skins, horns, and cattle bones.
Well, what else are they going to do with that stuff?
So, therefore, Jell-O is not on my...
get rid of it somehow.
No, not on my list of things to eat.
They can't just, you know, bury it somewhere, so they boil it and feed it to us in Jell-O.
Well, it makes the Jell-O...
darn
it's
good.
The gelatin. It gives it the texture.
Yeah,
and I don't
put a little whipped cream on there.
Where's
slice up some bananas? It's good stuff.
Yeah, I'm not on board with you on that one.
J-E-L-L bones,
pretty much. So I don't think that's something that they advertise. The Jell-O.
No, I'm sure they don't advertise that. Maybe they have it in micro.
But they've got tons of problems.
They probably have it in microscopic. You know, lettering on the packaging.
I don't
this
believe
is boiled
it's
bones.
No, they don't say that. Between the boiled bones and Bill Cosby, I don't know how it.
Yeah,
can
Jell-O's
survive.
Gotten a hit lately.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you ever make Jell-O?
I like Jell-O.
But
yeah.
Do you make it? Do you actually?
I don't
buy
make it?
It.
No, I buy it already.
You
made.
Buy it made?
Yeah, it has little. You just peel the top of it off, and you just.
You
put
can't
a little,
just boil some water. And
I would
stir it
I
up, and you put it in the fridge.
Lisa, you're talking about me here.
Oh my gosh.
I can make ice cubes. I lost the recipe one time though, but so I didn't have ice cubes for a long time.
Oh gosh!
But then I found the recipe, and then I was able to make ice cubes again.
Good, good. Yeah. I'm glad you got that
so
figured
now my,
out.
My liquid that
well,
I drink
second
is
to ice cubes would
now.
Be Jell-O.
All right. Well, we're listening to a Jell-O-sponsored episode of My Favorite Husband from 1950. This stars Lucille Ball.
And now back to Lucille Ball in My Favorite Husband. As we look in on the Coopers again, George thinks it's his mother's birthday and is out buying her a present. Mr. Atterbury has just found out it's Liz's birthday instead and is calling the department store frantically trying to locate George.
Hello. 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 Hello.
Hello.
I'm waiting for Mr. Cooper. Who's this?
Oh, Mr. Cooper's gone.
Oh.
I waited on him. Can I help you?
No, no, I have to... Wait a minute. You waited on him?
Uh-huh.
He bought a gift. What was it?
A long flannel nightgown.
Oh, yeah!
You said it, Buster.
What?
Sir.
Have you sent that out yet?
Oh, no, sir. We're just leaving.
Good, good. Change it. Send, I wonder what Liz would like.
You mean his wife?
Yes, yes.
She was looking at a suede jacket she was just crazy about.
Good, good. Change that nightgown to the suede jacket and send it out to Cooper's right away.
Yes, sir, right away. Goodbye.
Goodbye. Miss Perkins.
Yes, sir?
I'm going out. I have to find George Cooper. He thinks it's his mother's birthday, but it's his wife's.
Oh, God!
That girl's been working for me too long.
Thank you.
Who was it, Katie?
A package from Miller's department store. Looks like a gift.
Oh, it's my birthday present. Gimme, gimme, gimme.
But it's addressed to Mr. Cooper.
Of course, he doesn't want me to know.
Well, I'll put it in the hall closet.
Let me see it. Do you think it's addressed?
Well, are you going to open it?
Of course not. I wouldn't do a thing like that. Oh, look, Katie, it's a suede jacket.
Oh, I see.
It's the very one I've been looking at. Oh, that darling, wonderful husband of mine.
Oh, he certainly is thoughtful.
Oh, Katie, do you need anything at the store? I just have to wear this someplace. How about a dozen eggs?
No, we already have 2 dozen in the refrigerator.
Well, I'll get you another dozen. I want to wear this jacket to the store.
All right, I'll start getting dinner ready.
Well, what are we having for dinner?
The biggest omelet in the world.
Well, I'll be back in a little while.
Mr. Atterbury's office?
Is he there, Miss Perkins? I want to tell him I won't be back for a while yet. I had trouble finding a cake that will hold 65 candles.
Well, he's not here, Mr. Cooper. He's out looking for you.
Me? What for?
Well, he said something about it not being your mother's birthday. It's your wife's.
My wife's? Oh, my gosh. They delivered the nightgown I bought for my mother, and if I know Liz, she'll open it.
Oh, dear.
Oh, well, there's only one thing for me to do. I'll go home and see if I can sneak it out before she sees it. Goodbye.
No one in the kitchen. Let's see now. She always puts packages in the hall closet. Yeah, the hall is clear. Now, if that flannel nightgown is only in... Oops, oh, that must be Liz. I'll have to hide in the closet.
I'm back, Katie.
Gee, I better put this jacket back in the closet before George gets home.
Back you go, little present.
Oh, that must be George. I don't want him to catch me with this. I'll hide in the closet.
Mrs. Cooper? Mr. Cooper?
Phew, it's only Katie.
Yeah.
What?
What?
Help! Help! Help, George!
Here I am.
Oh, George, there's a great big ugly... Oh, it's you!
Yes, you scared me, too.
Oh, what were you doing in the closet?
Well, I wanted to get the present I sent you and exchange it for a better one.
What? I should say not.
Oh, but honey, you...
I have a confession to make, George. I opened the present you sent, and it's just what I wanted.
It is?
Absolutely. It's the same one I was looking at the other day.
You're not kidding me, Liz.
Of course not. I put it on right away.
You did? This afternoon?
Why not? I was so eager to show it off, I wore it down to the market.
You wore it? Oh, Liz, that isn't quite the thing to wear to the market.
Well, I know I shouldn't have worn it shopping, but I just couldn't resist.
Didn't people stare at you?
They couldn't keep their eyes off me.
I'll bet they couldn't.
Oh, that cute little cashier wouldn't let me alone till I took it off and let her try it on.
You took it off? In the market?
Don't worry, George. She was careful.
That's not what I was worried about. I hope you didn't catch cold.
Cold? No. As a matter of fact, on the way home, I was so warm, I took it off and carried it over my arm.
I must be losing my mind. Didn't you notice that a crowd was following you?
Crowd? Oh, George, it's a nice suede jacket, but it wouldn't cause that much fuss.
Suede jacket? You were wearing a suede jacket?
Of course. Don't you know what you gave me?
Well, sure, a suede nightgown. A jacket. Well, happy birthday, Liz.
Thank you.
George, boy, there you are. I've been looking all over town for you.
Oh, hi, Mr. Atterbury. You're just in time to see the birthday present George gave me.
Good, good. There's nothing smarter looking than a suede jacket.
I'll get it out of... How did you know?
Yeah, how did you know?
I don't know. Just lucky, I guess. Unless George told me.
Me? Why? Oh, yes, I told him, sure.
Yeah, he's been talking about it all week.
Really? Oh, George, and I thought you'd forgotten.
Oh, don't be silly.
Oh, honey, you're so wonderful. I don't know why I ever mistrusted you.
Neither do I.
Give me a kiss. I'll get my present out of the closet.
Say, what's going on here?
I called up the store and told them to switch presents.
Oh, thanks. Oh, gee, you really saved the day. She'll never suspect I thought it was Mother's birthday. I wonder who... Oh, no.
What's the matter?
The surprise party. I invited some of my mother's friends.
I'll get rid of them.
I'll get the door.
You're too late, boy.
Surprise, surprise.
Oh, Mrs. Martin. And Miss Flannoy.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you.
Happy birthday, Liz Cooper. Happy birthday to you.
Well, thank you, but I...
Are we here too soon?
What do you mean?
Well, where is...
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Liz. Happy birthday to you.
Well, that's very pretty. But what we'd like to know is, where is our...
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Liz. Happy birthday to you.
They sure sing a lot, don't they? Lousy, too.
Well, it's something to sing about. It's Liz's birthday.
Yes, Liz's birthday.
Ellen, somebody made a boo-boo. If we want to get in on this party, we'll have to play ball. We're all writing.
Will someone please tell me what's going on here?
Oh, nothing, dear, nothing. We just came to your party.
Well, that was very nice of you. Oh, and you brought presents for me?
Well, all right, here. Here, and happy birthday.
Thank you.
That one's for me.
Oh, thank you. Look, George, just what I need. An embroidered nightcap.
Yes, lovely.
Let's see what the other one is.
Well, a hot water bottle.
It's wonderful for your lumbago.
Lumbago? What makes you think I have lumbago?
Doesn't everybody?
No.
Keep it, dear. You will.
Well, thanks, anyway.
Oh, by the way, George, we went round back and gave Katie the cake.
Oh, no.
Well, we would have brought it in, but we couldn't get near it. The heat, you know. Yes, and I singed my eyebrows.
Well, it's just as well.
Did you get a cake for me, George?
Turn out the lights. I'm coming in with the cake.
Oh. Okay, bring her in.
Here I come.
Oh, God, look at the candles.
Katie, what happened? You look like you're on fire.
I ain't seen a blaze like that since the Chicago fire. Go ahead, Liz. Blow it out.
I'll try.
Almost. It's only about 20 more. Six more.
Wait till it comes around again. I'm dizzy. There. 1, 2, 3, 5, 10, 15, 20, 25, 30, 65 candles? What's going on, George?
Well, you see...
These friends of your mother's, embroidered nightcaps, a hot water bottle, 65 candles?
Well, I might as well...
Well, it worked, Mr. Cooper.
Huh?
What worked?
I told Mr. Cooper that you felt that you were getting old, and he figured if he gave you a real old ladies' party, it'd make you see how young you really are.
Yes! Worked fine, George. Oh,
sure. It worked all right.
Oh, George, you really understand me, don't you? That's the sweetest thing a husband ever did.
I don't get it. Don't ask any questions. You might louse things up. Besides, that cake looks mighty tasty.
What's the matter, Liz?
Oh, I'm just happy, George. I'm married to the most thoughtful man in the world.
No, it's not.
It is, too. I'm going to put this jacket on, and I'm never going to take it off.
Oh, Liz.
I mean it. It'll remind me how wonderful and thoughtful and sweet you are. I'm even going to wear it to bed tonight.
Oh, it's silly.
Well, I am. Oh, what's this? Oh, a card, and I didn't even see it.
Uh-oh. Did you change the card, too, Mr. Atterbury?
What card?
George, I can't keep anything from you, can I?
Huh?
You even knew I'd be silly enough to wear the jacket to bed. Look, Mr. Atterbury, the card says, "Hope this keeps you warm in bed tonight."
You have been listening to My Favorite Husband, starring Lucille Ball with Richard Denning, and based on characters created by Isabel Scott Rorick. Tonight's transcribed program was produced and directed by Jess Oppenheimer, who wrote the script with Madeline Pugh and Bob Carroll Jr. Original music was composed by Marlon Skiles and conducted by Wilbur Hatch. The part of Katie the Maid was played by Ruth Parrott. Listen, folks, how'd you like to put Lucille Ball in your pocket? There's a beautiful color cover and story of your favorite redhead in the November 27th issue of Quick, the pocket-sized magazine. It's on the stands now, so be sure to get your copy. Be sure to listen to Lucille Ball in My Favorite Husband again next week, presented by...
Oh, the big red letters stand for the Jell-O family. Oh, the big red letters stand for the Jell-O family. That's Jell-O.
Yum, yum, yum.
Jell-O puddings.
Yum, yum, yum.
Jell-O tapioca puddings. Yes, sirree.
Bob Lamond speaking.
That is My Favorite Husband, November 25th, 1950, Liz's birthday. More after these words. Okay, I don't think we have any rejoin music there. We're out of rejoin music. It's too expensive.
It up already.
It's too expensive. We can't afford it.
I think we used all of it up.
I thought that it was free, but I guess not. Shante said it's not free, so we don't have any more money in the budget.
Well, you better find some.
Well, thanks, David. It's all, let's see, 12:11. Happy Sunday morning, Lisa.
Sunday morning.
Yep, this is hour two of the WGN Radio Theater.
So that means we still have four more hours of classic radio
Between today and when we
come back.
Yeah, because we come back here at 11 p.m. tonight. In this hour, Tales of the Texas Rangers, starring Joel McRae. In our next hour, Dr. Christian, starring Gene Hirschholt. But right now it's time to play Cat's Pride. Crack the quote. What's the movie?
Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf?
Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf? And that
adaptation.
Yeah, Elizabeth Taylor in that, right?
Yes, you're right.
Yeah, and also Richard Burton,
yes,
I think.
Yes, you are right again.
Wow, yeah. I like being right.
Can you say it again? You peaked.
Was I right?
You were right.
Am I right?
You were right.
Can you record that for me, Shante? I want to use it on my answering machine of my phone.
Nope.
Carl, you are right.
Yeah.
Carl,
very
you are
seldom,
right. You are right.
But you are.
Right. You are right.
Yeah, just over
You're
and over.
Always
just
right.
Keep looping it.
With Autolite. All right, so what is the prize?
Well, what theater is it from, Carl?
Yeah,
it's two tickets to the premiere of Edge of Life at the Athenaeum Theater.
Athenaeum. The number to call, 312-981-7200. Which caller would you
three.
Like? Caller three. Call now. We'll be right back. Yeah, we don't have any theme music. We're
obviously having an audio issue. I'm pretty sure Carl
pulled all our theme
Carl's
music.
having a problem.
All right, so do we have Sandy on the line?
We do. Let's just talk to Sandy. Hey, Sandy. Hi, how are you?
I'm doing okay. How you doing?
Good. So glad you called in. You ready to play a little Crack the Quote?
I sure am.
Terrific. You know how it works. Who is afraid of Virginia Woolf? And I've got three quotes, and we'll see which one is the right one. And Carl is...
By the way, the music was all my fault.
I know it is.
I had the fader down.
I know it is. So I figured if there's a mistake, it's not Shantae, it's Carl.
It's not Shantae.
Oh, I know that.
Shantae doesn't make mistakes.
I know that. I'm well aware. All
right,
we'll go right past.
I'm like one huge giant...
I'll have to talk to your mom about that.
Mistake.
Okay. All right. Quote number one. This mess is so big and so deep, we cannot pick it up. Number two. Life is a big, fat, gigantic, stinking mess. Number three. In fact, he was sort of a flop, a great big fat flop.
I'll take two.
Number two.
Nah, it's definitely three.
Definitely three.
Definitely.
All right, let's hear it.
In fact, he was sort of a flop. A great big fat flop.
Carl is right.
I told you, Sandy.
You were
gotta
right.
Go with me. When I say it's definitely
well, it was too
100%,
late.
I know.
It was
she
a little too late. But
tickets,
Sandy,
though.
You know what? We're going to send you two tickets no matter what to see the premiere of Edge of Life. It's at what theater, Carl?
Hamana Hamana.
Come on, give it a shot.
Hey, Sandy, did you know what? The girl I had my first crush on when I was about 7 years old, name was Sandy.
Sandy.
Just want you to know that,
Sandy.
I wonder if you're... Are you the same Sandy? Did you
no,
go?
Did you? That's a beautiful name.
It is a beautiful name.
It is a beautiful name.
Sandy, did you go to Washington School in Schiller Park? That's where I had my crush on Sandy.
No.
Well, the thing is, there's probably more than one Sandy out there.
There might be, yeah.
But you know what, Sandy? You've won two tickets to the premiere of Edge of Life at the Athenaeum Theater, and it's running October 11th through November 3rd. You can get tickets and more information at athenaeumtheater.org, but you'd have to spell it. But congratulations. Thank
Way
you so much
go,
for
Sandy.
Calling in.
Is it Indiana?
It's not. It's in the city. It's in the north side of the city.
Oh, okay.
All right. Enjoy, Sandy. Thank you so much.
Okay.
Take care.
Have a great night.
You too.
All
right, I put the fader back up, so now we can play music and all kinds of stuff.
And all kinds of stuff. So you were the reason we didn't have the joiner,
you know,
too.
I didn't get an app in.
I've noticed that.
So
you're a little crabby.
No, I'm not crabby.
Oh.
I'm just a little tired.
I'm glad you don't
I'm
think
not
so.
Not crabby. Am I crabby?
No.
Come
you're,
on.
You're
My
fine.
Brother is the one who's crabby.
That's
My
what
crabby
I meant.
Brother
That's
Vince.
What I meant, Vince.
All right, time for Tales of the Texas Rangers. Joel McRae stars in this. This is called The Hatchet. February 11th, 1951, part one now of Tales of the Texas Rangers.
The National Broadcasting Company presents Joel McRae in Tales of the Texas Rangers. Tonight, transcribed from Hollywood, another authentic reenactment of a case from the files of the Texas Rangers. Tales of the Texas Rangers, starring Joel McRae as Ranger Jace Pearson. Texas, more than 260,000 square miles. And 50 men who make up the most famous and oldest law enforcement body in North America. From the files of the Texas Rangers come these stories based on fact. Only names, dates, and places are fictitious for obvious reasons. The events themselves are a matter of record. Case for tonight, The Hatchet.
It is 8:30 a.m., Sunday, May 16th, 1941. The Halleck family of Rock Point, Texas, is preparing to leave for church.
You want any more toast, Jim?
Nope. All I want is another cup of coffee. I'll get it myself. Why don't you sit down and eat?
Well, I would if I could get that boy to the table. Robert? Robert!
I'm coming, Ma.
You've been saying that for half an hour. Your eggs are getting cold and we'll be late for church.
All right.
And never mind that all right business. When your mother called you, you just come a-running.
Gee whiz, Pa, I got a word for face, don't I? I'll be right there.
Well, see that you are. You'll go without your breakfast.
Now, you come sit down, Hattie. No need of your stomach being empty.
Just coffee will do for me. Seems like the older a boy gets, the harder it is to get him out of bed in the morning.
What time did he get in last night?
After 11. Him and Sadie Lewis went to the picture show.
I told him I wanted him home at 10 o'clock nights.
Oh, Jim, it was Saturday night. He goes to school all week.
Well, school will soon be over. He'll be working with me in the store all summer. Maybe he won't feel much like staying out half the night when he's been on his feet all day. Look at the time. Robert!
Here, Pa, I'm here.
Well, it's about time.
Get your breakfast, but the eggs will be like rubber.
I don't want anything to eat. I'm not hungry.
Well, why didn't you say so before your ma wasted her time and the food?
You gotta eat something.
I'll have breakfast when we get back from church.
Sure, that'll be fine. You can make more work for your ma that way.
Gee, Pa, I just don't feel hungry now.
Oh, leave him alone, Jim. I'll get him something later. I just put the dishes in to soak. You two want to get out of my way, why don't you go next door and tell Mr. Driscoll we're about ready to leave.
Is he riding with us again?
Yes, he's riding with us again, so stop sulking about it. Come on. You ought to be glad to have your teacher for a neighbor. You wouldn't be at the head of your graduating class if it weren't for his helping you.
I see enough of him in school without seeing him Sunday, too.
Yeah. Well, when you get away to college in the fall, you might be wishing you had somebody like him close by to give you a hand. Ring the bell.
He don't answer. Maybe he went on.
He'd have told us. And I didn't hear his car. Come on, maybe he's out in the back. Mr. Driscoll! That's funny. Run up the back steps and take a look in the kitchen window.
Oh, why don't we just go without him?
Will you do like I tell you?
Okay.
See anything?
No, he didn't. Pa! Pa!
What is it, son? What's the matter?
Look at him, lying there on the floor.
Oh.
Pa, what is it? What happened to him?
Come away, son. Don't look anymore. Come away. I gotta call the sheriff. It looks like he's been murdered.
Sheriff Alvin Jeffers took one look at the scene of the crime and put in a call for the assistance of the Texas Rangers. Ranger Jace Pearson was assigned.
Mighty bloody job, Jace. No weapon in sight.
Nope. Judging by the marks, though, it was something with two edges, one blunt and one sharp. Probably a hatchet, Sheriff.
Either that or two weapons.
It's possible, but not likely. You say the JP's been here?
Mm-hmm. As soon as we're finished, the body will be moved into the funeral home for autopsy. Established time of death.
That'll help. Where'd your call come from?
Neighbors next door, the Hallecks. Man, wife, and son. Man and boy spotted Driscoll through the window when they come to get him for a lift to church.
I'd like to talk to him.
Sure, I told him to stick to home. Well, we can go out back and hop the fence. Avoid that crowd out front.
Good. Yeah, front room looked like Driscoll went in big for books.
Yeah, he was an English teacher at the high school. Alec boy Robert was in one of his classes, I think.
Driscoll live alone?
Mm-hmm. Widower. Here, step on this box and hop the fence.
You go ahead. I can get over without it.
Okay. Well, Alec saw us coming. There he is at the back door.
Howdy, Sheriff. Ranger, come on in.
Thanks.
Ranger Pearson, Jim Halleck.
Howdy, howdy. Oh, my wife Hattie and my boy Robert.
Howdy.
Howdy, Ranger.
You found Driscoll's body this morning?
Me and Robert. Saw it through the window.
What time?
Oh, about 8:45. That's when we always leave for services.
Oh, Jace, I ought to call my office. Have the funeral home come for the body now.
All right, go ahead.
Mind if I use your phone, Halleck?
Help yourself.
I'll show you where it is, Sheriff.
No, you'd better stay, Robert.
Okay.
You and your dad found the body. Would you mind, Mrs. Halleck?
Not at all. In here, Sheriff.
Thank you.
Either of you see Driscoll yesterday or last night?
We both saw him outside last night, a little after 6. I was coming home from the store. I sell groceries. Robert was outside waiting for me so he could take the car.
Big date, huh?
Yeah.
What was Driscoll doing?
Digging a flower border on his lawn.
You talked to him?
Just called to him after Robert took the car and drove off. Asked if he planned on riding to church with us. No sense taking two cars when neighbors are going to the same place.
I see. That all?
That's all.
You didn't hear anything during the evening or the night?
Nope. Me and Hattie turned in a little after 9.
How about you, Robert? What time did you get home? What time did you get home?
You can tell him. I know you was late. Your mother heard you come in.
A little after 11.
Where were you?
To a picture show with Sadie Lewis.
What did you see?
I don't remember the name of it. Bing Crosby's in it.
Jase, you gonna be much longer?
Oh, no, Sheriff. Why?
I spoke to my office. One of my deputies got a report. Rancher named Finney chased somebody off his place with a shotgun last night. Doorbell, Hattie.
I'm going.
Did the deputy think the report might have anything to do with the Driscoll's murder?
Who knows? Fella Finney saw was doing something around a cattle tank, though.
Good place to get rid of a weapon. Cattle tanks have been used before.
Maybe we ought to go out and take a look.
Yeah.
Robert? It's Gene to see you.
Hi, Bob.
Hi.
Hi, Mr. Halleck, Sheriff.
Hello, Gene.
Gee, I just drove in to see if Bob wanted to go out to the shack and camp, and I saw that crowd in front of next door. Somebody killed old man Driscoll, huh?
Yeah. I can't go with you today.
Well, yeah, guess not. Are you helping the sheriff, Ranger?
We're helping each other.
Well, boy, I sure hope you catch that guy. Mr. Driscoll was the best teacher we ever had.
We'll try to square things for him, Gene. Coming, Jase?
Yeah. Thanks for your help. We may want to talk to you again later.
You're sure welcome, Ranger.
Bye. Bye, ma'am.
So long, folks.
Bye. So long, Ranger.
Who's that kid, the one who just came in?
You mean Gene? No, name's Gene McCready. Pal of Robert's. They go to school together. Why?
Just wondering. Robert Halleck ever give any of you any trouble around here? Yeah, we'll take my car.
No, he's a good kid. Why?
I just got a feeling he was covering up for something, that's all.
Like what?
If I knew that, I wouldn't be wondering about it. How far to Finney's place?
Turn off to the right, about 6 miles out. Just this side of the Lewis place.
The Lewis place? Well, Robert Halleck says that he was out at a movie last night with a girl named Sadie Lewis.
Yeah, she lives out there. Mike Lewis' daughter. Only 15, but a big girl for her age. Lewis watches her like a hawk.
I'd like to stop by the Lewis place and talk to that girl.
Okay, we can go out there after we check at Finney's.
Well, right here's about where he was when I spotted him. I called, but he started to run. I threw a load of buckshot after him.
You didn't see who it was?
No, I didn't. I was too far off, about 300 feet back toward the house.
What time was that, Finney?
Oh, just before 11 o'clock last night.
Wasn't that kind of late for you to be out here?
Well, I've been visiting. I was cutting across the ranch walking home.
From where?
Mike Lewis's place. We get together Saturday nights, play cards. Oh, no, no, not for money, just passing time.
You always carry a shotgun when you're passing time?
Well, matter of fact, I do. Bag a jackrabbit once in a while, going, coming between here and Mike's place. So I always stowed a gun just in case.
I see.
I see better than you do, Jase. I've eaten out here. Mrs. Finney can do more things with a jackrabbit in a pot than most women can do with a chicken.
Okay, I was just checking. Now, about the fellow you saw.
Oh, yeah. Well, like I said, when he didn't answer my call, I fluffed him with a shot. Don't think I hit him, though. A little too far. Barely saw him as it was.
Which way did he take off?
Well, that way.
Highway's about a mile across country there. You chase him?
Yep, sure did. But I reckon he was a lot younger than me.
Well, what makes you say that?
Well, after 2 minutes of running, I was puffing like an engine in a tunnel. He was pulling away with every jump.
Is there anything around here he might have been trying to steal?
No, not a thing. Unless he was trying to make off with a cow, and that'd be nothing to try on foot.
Well, Sheriff, guess we'd better chuck our boots and hop in there.
Ain't it my cattle tank?
That's right, Finney.
But what for?
If we're lucky, the weapon that was used in the killing of the high school teacher, Driscoll. The cattle tank was big. The bottom was covered deep with a couple of inches of oozing mud and slime. And we slithered around in it for almost half an hour.
Along the bottom, Jase.
Yeah, it sure is.
I was going to have it cleaned out next month.
Looks like we're going to have to save you the trouble and the expense. We'll have to call a pumping crew, Sheriff.
Yeah, it looks that way. Hey, give me a hand up, Eddie.
All right, not easy.
Thanks. Wait over here, Jase, and we'll boost you out.
Okay, Sheriff.
Now, we're sure going to feel silly if we have this pumped out and there's nothing here.
We'll feel sillier if we don't have it done, and there is something here that turns up later. I think we ought to...
What's the matter, Jace?
Feel something. Here, under my foot.
Yeah, I felt it coming over this way, too. Some stones in the mud.
No, this is metal. Wait, I'll get it.
Ooh. What is it, Jace?
Look for yourself, Sheriff. Just about what we're looking for. A hatchet.
You are listening to Tales of the Texas Rangers, starring Joel McRae as Ranger Jace Pearson.
He found the hatchet, Lisa, the murder weapon.
I heard that.
He found it there amongst all the muck and the slime and the water and the rocks.
Good.
It's pretty good.
He's good.
Found it. Tales of the Texas Rangers. These are good shows.
And
you know
I was
that?
Going to mention, we have a great fun fact posted on our Facebook page about this particular show.
And yeah, Stacey it's a Keats great Sr. picture, too, of Stacey Sr. Stacey Keats Sr. along with Joel McRae. They're kind of working on a show. It's really, it's a terrific picture, very rare picture. We posted that, so check it out. This is an episode called The Hatchet from February 11th, 1951. We'll get back to it in just a few minutes.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
You know what, Lisa?
What, Carl?
Just had this epiphany.
That's a good word for you.
It is. It has how many syllables?
Four.
Epiphany? How do you know that without holding your chin?
I'm pretty fast that way.
Have this epiphany. We're on WGN radio.
Yeah. You just figured that one out?
No, I mean, I kind of knew that, but it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Because this station, I mean, it's such a legendary station, you know? I remember growing up in Chicago listening to so many of the great, I mean, Bob Collins and, you know, Spike Odell, of course, and Eddie Schwartz was my favorite. I used to listen to Eddie all the time. And then one time I get a call from Eddie Schwartz. He called me on the phone and said, hey, I'd like you to come on the show and play classic radio programs on my show. I think it was a Halloween.
See, and I think you've come full circle.
For Halloween,
right?
Yeah. Yeah, and I was on his show, and then he made me a regular. I became a regular on his show like every 2 or 3 months.
You're regular?
I was regular.
You're regular.
Metamucil makes
glad
you
you're
regular.
Very regular.
Yeah, I made myself
I
very
I heard
regular.
That too.
But, Roger, did you ever work with Eddie Schwartz?
No, I did not have the pleasure. I did listen to him both on, he was on WIND,
was,
I believe,
yes.
And then here on WGN.
Yep.
But I remember him from WIND, which was before when he was here.
Yeah.
I knew people who knew him personally, who
yeah.
had spent a lot of time with him and had heard stories and stuff. And so, yeah, it, that's my connection to him. Nothing spectacular.
Yeah,
Roger,
we became
did you
good
know
friends.
That, that Carl and I started working? Working together at WIND.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
That? Yeah.
Yep.
Look at that.
We were there for 10 years.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yes.
Well, and see, I would know that if I had listened to WIND.
And
but
now you know.
I am a fairly religiously attentive listener
well,
of WGN
clearly
radio.
Well, clearly our show was not religious in any way.
But getting back to Eddie Schwartz.
Yeah.
So Eddie, he called me and I was so, oh my gosh, I was
well,
so
did he
honored.
Say, sorry, I got the wrong number first?
Yeah, sorry, wrong number.
Yeah, right.
Is this
like
Agnes Moorhead?
Moorhead.
Yeah, sorry, wrong number. And he called me. He's like, I'd like you to be on the show for Halloween, play some scary shows. And I did. Mm-hmm. And then it went over really well. People were calling like, oh, yeah, this is great. We love these classic radio shows. So then for years and years, I was on maybe 4 to 5 times a year.
Mm-hmm.
Christmas time, Halloween, Father's Day, Mother's Day, that type
okay.
of stuff.
Yeah.
And he'd have me on and I'd spend all night with him. And we would play these shows. But, because, you know, he was on, like, Nick DiGilio's
hours. Oh, yeah,
hours.
Long time.
Now, here's the thing, though. Mm. It was at Bradley Place. I used
right.
to go to Bradley Place to do this.
Which
not...
was a lot closer for you.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you know what? Did you
parking
ever see...
was easy, too.
Did
what?
You ever see those... Yeah, it was. Did you ever see those studios over there, Bradley
yeah.
Place?
Yeah, wow. I've been over to Bradley Place
they
a couple
were,
of times.
They were, I mean, amazing. I mean, not mm-hmm. as nice as what we have here now,
yeah.
303.
Well, technology has changed, too.
Yeah, but they were luxurious
yeah.
studios at Bradley Place.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember going in there and saying to myself, wow, would I love to have a show, my own show,
mm-hmm.
on WGN someday,
and
right?
Guess what?
And you know what?
Well, he shares it with me.
I don't know.
Guess what, Ryan? I'll give you five guesses.
The first four don't count?
And the first four don't count.
You got your but show.
This, but this proves one thing, Roger.
What?
Dreams do come true.
There
well, that too.
Hard work pays off.
No,
hey,
but
Carl,
you know
you
what?
Don't have to talk anymore. We're just finishing your thoughts.
No, what I was going to say is if you wish upon a star.
That's what I said. You
know, wish upon a star. No, but really and truly, I wished and wished and wished so
well,
hard.
We wished pretty much together for
and
a long time.
And then Lisa and I were on WIND, and there's nothing wrong with WIND. Great station.
Yeah.
We were on that station for a long time.
Actually, it was back when Eddie was there. Mm-hmm. It had great ratings.
Yeah.
Sure, they had a great lineup.
Yeah, no doubt. Clark Weber was over mm-hmm. there. Yeah.
Well, I'm sure the ratings have dropped since we left.
Plummeted. Didn't you get the call from them? They wanted you back.
I'm waiting.
but we've got to get back to the show.
Yeah,
but the thing I wanted to say is, you know, folks out there, if you want something bad enough, this is true, you can achieve it because all you got to do is just keep thinking about it, working hard towards it, making little baby steps towards it.
Right, well,
and that's what we did.
Thanks
Lisa.
For the pep talk.
Yeah. There you go. If I want to be 6'4", I can be 6'4".
With
I just got to get big.
Didn't you know we got a room
platforms.
In the back? There's a rack in
lips.
There. We can stretch it out.
That's right.
All right. Let's get back now to Tales of the Texas Rangers.
We continue now with tonight's case, The Hatchet. An authentic story from the files of the Texas Rangers.
It was the murder weapon, all right. The blood had been washed away from most of it, but there was skin tissue and hair that had stuck to the blunt end, and...
Well, I reckon that's it, all right, Jace.
But who threw it away on my place, and why?
The killer wanted to get rid of it in a place he thought nobody'd be liable to find it. Must have thought of this spot last night.
That means he knew the place.
He wouldn't cross the range on foot unless he did. You say he ran off that way?
That's right. Like Sheriff said, highway's about a mile.
He could have left the car there he was getting back to, or he might have cut off in another direction when you lost him. You have horses here, don't you, Finney?
Why, sure, but nothing like the one you're towing in that trailer behind your car. It's really a horse, Ranger.
I think so, too. What I want is a mount for the sheriff here.
Where do you figure on riding, Jace?
Out on the range, see if we can pick up a trail. I'll unload charcoal and start ahead, and you walk back to the ranch house and get one of Finney's horses and catch up to me.
Chase! Hey, Chase!
I'll wait for you, Sheriff.
Easy, boy. Find anything?
Track's all right. Not too heavy on this ground, though. They're easy to lose.
Yeah, but this is a straight shot from the ridge. Looks like he was sure going for the road, all right.
No doubt about it. If he left a car there, we might be able to find some tire marks where he parked.
Afraid you're going to be stymied there, Jace.
Why?
County just worked the roads over. Shoulders are all fresh gravel.
Oh? What's the shortest way to the Lewis Ranch? Go back for the car or keep riding?
Well, we'd save a little time going back for the car, not much.
Well, charcoal's full of run. Let's give him a chance for a workout. Come on.
Get up.
The Lewis Ranch was big and well kept. There was something dismal and brooding about it. When we got inside, I knew what it was. It was as though the place were reflecting the personality of the heavy-browed man who owned it.
So you want to see my daughter, huh?
That's right.
What about?
Just want to ask her where she was last night?
She was into the movie house with Robert Halleck.
Yeah, we'd like a little more information than that, Mike. The ranger...
I know everything my daughter does. I can tell you anything you want to know.
That may be so, Mr. Lewis, but we still want to see her. That's an official request.
I'll call her. Sadie!
Yes, Pa?
Come into the house.
Yes, Pa?
Into the parlor.
Oh, I didn't know anybody was here.
Sheriff and the ranger want to talk to you. They don't think you and Robert was at the show last night.
Nobody said that.
You don't have to say it.
Look. If you can't keep out of this, you can take your mind-reading act into another room until we're finished.
It'd be better if you didn't interfere, Mike.
Go ahead, ask. Maybe I'll be interested in the answers, too.
Sadie, don't be nervous. Just tell the truth. Were you with Robert Halleck last night?
Yes.
Where'd you go?
We went...
Where did you go?
To the movie.
Remember the name of the picture?
The new one with Bing Crosby.
You saw that with me a month ago when I took you to Sweetwater.
Oh, I saw it again. There's no other show to see in town. Is there? Robert brought you the ticket stubs, didn't he, Pa?
Brought you the ticket stubs?
That's right, Ranger. Brought me the stubs. My daughter's supposed to be someplace. I want to make sure she's there. I'm not gambling on being fed any lies.
No, I can see that. You're not gambling that your girl might tell you the truth either, given the chance.
Reckon the law's got nothing to say about that.
I reckon not. Let me have that package, Sheriff.
Yeah. Here.
What's in it?
Just something I want you to look at.
Hatchet.
Yeah. You ever see this before?
No.
How about you, Sadie? You ever see this before?
No, sir, I never.
Why are you asking us about it?
Just routine. This is the weapon used to kill Driscoll, the high school teacher. All right, Sheriff. Wrap it up again. Let's go. Sorry to have bothered you, Mr. Lewis.
Yeah.
You ready, Sheriff?
Yeah. Goodbye, Mike. Sadie.
Bye.
Bye.
Sadie, you've been lying to me. Answer me!
Looks like Sadie's in for a rough time, Jace.
And she wasn't telling the truth. He knows it.
Her story ties in with Robert Halleck's, Jace.
I know.
Oh.
Be dark by the time we get back to Finney's place. Movie house open tonight?
Sure. Why?
I want to talk to the manager. The theater was a small-town showplace. The manager couldn't remember seeing Robert Halleck and Sadie Lewis. He referred us to the ticket taker. The ticket taker turned out to be Robert Halleck's pal, Gene McCready.
Come on, Gene, talk up. Was Robert here for the show last night or wasn't he?
I don't know.
He's your best friend, and you were on the door last night. If he came in, you saw him.
Yeah, he was here.
Did he stay for the whole show?
No. No, he didn't stay for any of it.
How do you know? Did you see him leave before it was over?
Well, he didn't even go in. He just stopped by to get a couple of ticket stubs from me.
So that's it.
Why didn't you tell us that right off?
Because I promised Bob that if anybody asked, I'd say him and Sadie was here.
Well, why would anybody ask?
Bob thought Sadie's father might. He's asked me before when they were supposed to be here.
Well, I guess that's what we wanted, Jason.
Yeah, it's part of it, not all of it. Gene, I want you to forget that I asked you anything, understand?
Yes, sir.
Let's go, Sheriff.
I guess we better pick up Robert Halleck and the Lewis girl, Jace.
Not yet. All we know is they didn't see the show. That isn't enough.
Don't see why not. This wasn't just a transient thing. Driscoll didn't have no enemies, unless it was one of his pupils hated him.
We can't narrow it down to one student, though. Not until we've checked on all of them. I'm going to sleep on this tonight. When school opens tomorrow, I'm going out there. Driscoll had been a popular teacher at Rock Point High, but he had an iron-bound code of ethics where honesty was concerned, and that was the key I needed. I found the answer in a batch of test papers he'd been grading. I took the papers back to the sheriff's office.
Morning, Jace.
Morning.
Find anything out the school?
Plenty. Look at these.
What are they?
English class test papers of Robert Halleck and Gene McCready.
I see.
Halleck's mark's pretty high, 94.
Yeah. Hey, only half the answers on McCready's paper have been checked. His isn't graded.
Compare them and you'll see why. His answer to every single question is exactly the same as Halleck's, all the way down the line. Driscoll must have noticed it while he was marking.
You think McCready was cribbing his answers from Bob Halleck's paper?
Halleck was at the head of the class. McCready was just barely hanging on. Those papers were clipped together in the drawer of Driscoll's desk with this slip of paper. A few notes scribbled on it in Driscoll's handwriting. Here, read what it says.
An obvious case of cheating. Flunk McCready. If Halleck knew of this, advise principal neither should be permitted to graduate. Well,
the test was on Friday. Driscoll must have been grading those papers after school let out. Halleck came home, but Gene McCready was sitting out a punishment in another class for being late.
That means Driscoll might have run into Gene Friday afternoon and asked him about it.
That's what I figured.
Of course, Gene could have told Bob later.
Yeah, he could have.
Robert Halleck's the boy, all right, Jace. He lied about where he was Saturday night, and Gene was working at the theater.
Maybe yes, maybe no. You get the autopsy report yet?
Oh, yeah. Came in this morning.
What time did Driscoll die?
Between 9:30 and 10:30 Saturday night.
Then we can't eliminate Gene McCready.
Why not?
He starts taking theater tickets at 6:30, but the box office closes at 9 when the main feature goes on again. He's got nothing to do after that. His work's finished.
Well, I didn't think of that.
You better give me the hatchet, Sheriff. I'll need it.
Sure. Got it locked in the drawer here. What's your plan?
You go out to the school, get Bob Halleck, and bring him to his father's store. I'll meet you there.
Would you want Gene McCready, too?
He's not in school. He's supposed to be home sick. We can pick him up later. I don't want him and Robert together.
Ranger, you're crazy. Crazy, I tell you.
Now, calm down, Mr. Halleck. You admit the hatchet comes from your place.
No.
A minute ago, you said it did.
Well, it disappeared months ago. It was lost.
It got lost again in a cattle tank. Where's your car?
Out back, through that door.
All right, let's look it over. Your son was using this car Saturday night.
Yes. Why? What are you looking for?
Hatchet had to be carted away from Driscoll's, and there was blood on it. I'm looking for a stain.
Well, you don't see any, do you?
No. I see a spot on the front seat that's cleaner than the rest. You smell that? It's been rubbed with gasoline.
Ranger, you're wrong. You gotta be wrong. My kid wouldn't do a thing like that.
Out here, Robert. Here we are, Chase.
Pa, what's the matter? Why did they take me out of school?
Son, whatever you've done, me and your ma'll stand by you. Now, tell him the truth. You were at the show Saturday. Tell him you were.
How about it, Robert? Gene said you just dropped by to pick up ticket stubs.
I wasn't at the show.
Why didn't you tell me? Why?
I couldn't. Because of Sadie's father. He'd kill her.
You better tell us what happened, boy.
Why? I picked up Sadie in the car at 6:30. We went into the movie house to leave the car with Gene and get the stubs.
You left the car with Gene?
Yes. So it'd be around the theater in case Sadie's pa came by.
Well, then what happened?
Then we arranged for Gene to meet us out at the crossroads between the Lewis place and Finney's at 11 o'clock. So I'd have the car to take Sadie home.
See, Ranger? He didn't have the car all the time.
Now, go ahead, Robert. Where did you and Sadie go?
We went for a ride with somebody who picked us up behind the theater.
What do you mean by somebody? Who?
Sadie's mother.
What? Why, Sadie Lewis's mother is dead.
No, she isn't. That's what Mr. Lewis tells everybody. They were divorced before he moved here with Sadie.
Could that be true, Sheriff?
Well, Jace, I don't know. Mike Lewis always had his wife died.
She didn't. He just hated her, that's all. And, well, if he finds out Sadie's been seeing her, he'll beat her up.
All right, Robert. I think you're telling the truth. There's something I want you to identify. This.
Why, that's our old kindling hatchet.
Where'd you see it last?
Well, the shack. Me and Gene built a shack up in the woods last fall. We go camping up there. I built most of it because Gene, he was working part-time after school at Finney's Ranch.
That's right, Jace. Gene did work for Finney for a while.
Come on, Sheriff. We'd better go pick him up. Gene McCready wasn't at his home, and he wasn't sick. We got the location of the shack he built with Robert Halleck, got horses, and rode into the woods to look for him.
There's the shack, Jace, just through that clump of trees.
Yeah. Come on, Sharky.
Hey, the door's opening. It's Gene.
Howdy, Gene.
What are you doing up here?
Just come up to take you into town, Gene. A few things we want to ask you about.
Like what?
Like how you spent Saturday evening between the time you stopped taking tickets and the time you met Robert at the crossroad between the Lewis place and Finney's.
Come on, Gene. I'll boost you up behind me.
Well, can I get my jacket? It's inside.
Go ahead.
Hey, he don't look guilty, Jace. Not a bit rattled.
I know. Well, we could be wrong, but you better give me your holster, Sheriff, if he's going to ride behind you.
Yeah, I guess you're... Look out, Jace!
You hit, Sheriff?
No, but I hit him. He had a rifle in there. Stepped out shooting just as you leaned over.
Oh, you hit me.
Yeah. Let's see. There's a flesh wound through the side.
I didn't want to hurt him, but Mr. Driscoll wasn't going to let me graduate, the old fool.
All right, shut up. Hold still till I fix this wound.
Will he be all right, Jase?
Yeah.
I'm sorry I had to do that, shooting a kid.
Yeah, but his being a kid doesn't make you bulletproof. And it didn't stop him from killing Driscoll. There. All right, Sheriff. Let's rig a litter and carry him in.
Gene McCready was just old enough to stand formal trial for the murder of his high school instructor. On September 20th, 1941, he was taken to the state penitentiary at Huntsville to serve out a sentence of 25 years.
And here again is the star of our show, Joel McCrae.
There's a poem that was sent to me by Captain M.T. Lone Wolf Gonzalez, who's commander of Company B of the Texas Rangers. It's not only amusing, but seems to reflect the thoughts of many a police officer. I hope you'll enjoy hearing it. It's called Not Guilty. I guess I've seen 1,000 men go in this jail and out, from tramps with month-old whiskers to rich men with the gout. Not one of them was guilty of the crimes the law accused. Seems they were all just victims of some officer's abuse. From the time the keys are rattled till they're locked up in the cell, their voices, though they differ from a whisper to a yell, the song is always just the same that everyone will sing. I don't see why they put me here. I haven't done a thing. Makes no difference what they've done or how mean the crime has been. When they're locked behind those prison bars, they're always free from sin. Though the evidence be solid and their voice with guilt may ring, they'll stand right up and tell you, I haven't done a thing. Good night, folks. See you again next week. Good night.
Next week, Joel McCrae in another authentic reenactment of a case from the files of the Texas Rangers. Joel McCrae is currently seen starring in the Universal International Technicolor production, Frenchie. Tonight's cast included Tony Barrett, Farley Bear, Mike Barrett, Sam Edwards, Joe Duvall, Tom Cook, and Gerald Moore. This story was transcribed and adapted by Joel Murcutt, and the program was produced and directed by Stacy Keach. Hal Gibney speaking.
Three chimes mean good times on NBC.
That's Tales of the Texas Rangers, February 11th, 1951, with The Hatchet, starring Joel McCrae. Hope you enjoyed that. Let's take a quick break, then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Thank you, Roger. It is 11 minutes after 1 o'clock in the morning here, Sunday morning, hour 3. Thanks for staying up late with us. We have Dr. Christian, good drama, starring Gene Herschel, coming your way from 1937 in just a few minutes. But right now, it's time to play our game, Cat's Pride. Crack the quote. What's the movie, Lisa?
Papillon.
Oh, great movie.
You know,
I will get
this.
From? I'm going to say 1976.
Yes, close.
Pretty close, right?
You're close. It was 1973.
Okay.
Yep.
Well, that's only three off.
Yeah,
right?
It's not much.
Not bad. Yeah, I'm going to get this right, by the way.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, whoever
great
gets
movie.
Through
Steve
will
McQueen,
use you as
Dustin
a lifeline.
Dustin Hoffman.
Yeah.
Good movie. Okay. What do they win?
They're going to win two tickets to what theater?
Hamana.
The Athenaeum Theater to see Edge of Life.
The what theater?
Athenaeum. It's on Southport on the north side of the city.
312-981-7200. Which caller would you like?
Caller 2.
Caller 2? All
yeah,
right.
Hurry,
call
dial
us
quickly.
Right now. Play the game with us. 312-981-7200. We'll be right back.
It's time now for Crack the Quote, brought to you by Cat's Pride.
Hey, Tim. How are you?
Hey, how you guys doing? Can I first say thanks for being out there? I'm a
cop on patrol, and you guys keep me sane between the calls.
Tim.
Well, we want to say thank you to you for being out there and
you're
keeping
the guy
us safe.
That we want to thank. And,
that's right.
You put it on the line for us all the time. We really appreciate you. Thank you for your service, sir. So,
thank you very much.
Yeah, you got it. What town, may I ask, are you a police officer in?
I'm probably not supposed to be making this.
Okay, that's fine.
I don't blame you.
Okay, well, you know, wherever you are, stay safe out there.
That's right.
All right, let's play the game.
All right, Papillon, and I've got three quotes, and you can use Carl as a lifeline, although, I don't know, his track record is spotty at best.
I'm going to get this one.
Okay, I say you're not.
Okay.
Okay, number one, look both ways before you cross me.
Oh, no.
Number two, you double... He knows me so well. Number two, you double cross me, I'll kill you. Number three, you dirty double crossing rat.
Oh boy.
I
think it's two.
I think it's two as well.
You both think it's two? You double cross me, I'll kill you?
We know what we're talking about.
Or you might.
I watched the movie about 10 times. I can't believe I don't remember, but it sounds
I didn't make it easy, that's for sure. All right, let's see if you're right.
You double cross me, I'll kill you.
Yeah, we got it, Tim. We got it, buddy.
Tim, I hope you have a chance to go to see The Edge of Life. It's at the Athenaeum Theater, which is on Southport. It runs on October 11th through November 3rd. You get tickets at athenaeumtheater.org, but you get two tickets. So congratulations. Thank you for calling, and we appreciate your service, sir.
Yes, we do.
I appreciate you guys.
Thanks, Tim. Appreciate it. All right, well, guess what, Lisa Wolf?
What,
we have
Carl
an episode now of Dr. Christian from 1937. Do you know much about this show? I mean, we've played a few, but...
Not too much.
Yeah, so Gene Hirschholt played Dr. Paul Christian on this. It was heard on radio, seen in the movies, and also adapted to TV. It was a very popular series. Now, Dr. Christian, he practiced his medicine in the Midwestern town of River's End with the assistance of his nurse, Judy Price, played by Rosemary DeCamp. By the mid-1940s, listeners contributed the majority of the scripts to the show. This was really cool. Now, they get, are you ready for this? $2,000 for the top script of the year, but the runners-up would get $500. So if you sent a script in, they used it, $500. And
that's a great concept.
Yeah, and if it won the best script of the year, $2,000. And you know who were among the winners? Rod Serling, he wrote for it, you know, sent in a script. And Earl Hamner Jr., who wrote The Waltons. He was created The Waltons and stuff like that. All right, so it was a long run on CBS Radio, 1937 all the way to 1954. It was sponsored for most of the run by Vaseline. And that'll make your hair nice and
Vaseline
shiny.
Vaseline is one of those products that is still around and has been around forever.
My
and
mom uses it.
I use it.
You know what? My mom's skin.
But not on my hair.
Is so perfect. She has no wrinkles. She's 90 years old.
She has wrinkles.
No, she doesn't have any wrinkles. You want to know why?
Because she uses Vaseline.
Does this, like about 2 inches thick of Vaseline every night before she goes to bed.
Is that what it sounds like when she puts it on?
All
that doesn't sound like you're putting
on
Vaseline.
Yeah, that's what she does. What does it sound like, Lisa?
Sounds like something
like
other than that.
Like I'm sitting on a whoopee cushion?
Nope, not that either.
All right. Well, anyway, Dr. Christian, good show. We have an episode for you now from December 26, 1937. It's called Doris Fleming. Here's Gene Hirschholt in part one of Dr. Christian.
From New York City, we bring you Chapter 8 in the Chronicles of River's End.
The star of the show, Gene Hirschholt, in his greatest of all roles.
The title of the show, Dr. Christian.
The sponsor of the show, the Cheesebro Manufacturing Company, owners of the trademark Vaseline. And here we are in New York, where our star, the famous motion picture actor Gene Hirschholt, is enjoying a brief holiday after completing his work with Sonia Henie in the 20th Century Fox picture, Happy Landing.
The talents of this great artist in the role of Dr. Christian are presented for your enjoyment each Sunday afternoon by the makers of Vaseline preparations. These products have been known to every household in the United States and Canada for more than half a century as standard home remedies for many minor ailments such as scratches, cuts, skin abrasions, burns and scalds, chapped skin, head colds. And they have earned the high place they hold in the home medicine cabinet because every Vaseline product is the finest of its kind that can be produced. So when you buy, be sure to look for the trademark Vaseline on the package. If you don't see it, you are not getting the genuine article. And so to today's story of Dr. Paul Christian, starring Jean Hersholt in the title role. The time is Sunday morning. The scene is laid outside the little white church, which stands not far from Dr. Christian's office. Services are over. The congregation streams out the door, pauses in little groups in front of the church.
Good morning, Dr. Christian.
Well, hello there, young lady. How did you like the sermon this morning?
All right. But I got kind of sleepy before it was over.
Toby, you shouldn't say that. Good morning, Dr. Christian.
Good morning, Harriet. Say, can you keep a secret, Toby?
Of course I can.
I got a little sleepy myself.
Dr. Christian, you're spoiling all the good work I've done for a week.
Oh, bosh. Not a good spoil, Toby. Besides, I have some theory about bringing up children.
What do you know about bringing up children?
Nothing. It's always those kind of people who have theories. Anyhow, Toby, I'm glad to see you in church, even if you do get sleepy. When I was little, I didn't go to church. And look what I turn out to be. Just a small-town doctor.
The kindest doctor in the whole world.
Oh, now, Harriet. Oh, say, how are things at the dress shop?
Oh, the shop's doing very well, thank you. I'm beginning to feel really successful. And when I started it, I didn't think a dress shop in River's End would go at all.
Well, you see, I was right.
Mm-hmm.
Good morning.
Oh, good morning, Mr. Potter.
Oh, hello, John.
Going my way?
Yes, why?
I'll walk along with you.
Well, goodbye, Harriet. Goodbye, Toby.
Goodbye, Doctor.
Bye, Dr. Christian.
Bye.
I let Mrs. Potter drive the car home. Feel like stretching my legs a bit.
Well, I'm afraid you'll have to do most of the stretching alone. There's my office, and I've got some work to do.
You mind if I came in for a moment?
Why, no. Come ahead.
I promise I won't keep you from your work too long. There's something I've been meaning to discuss with you ever since I returned from Chicago.
So? Well, if you'll wait until I find my pipe. Help yourself to the tobacco there.
I don't smoke a pipe.
Oh, well, there's some cigars in the table drawer if you...
I don't smoke at all.
Well, then have a chair. You sit down, don't you?
Thank you. What I want to ask you, Paul, is... how long have you known this... Mrs. Niles?
Harriet? Oh, I've known Harriet Niles ever since she came here.
I've been trying to place her. The very first time I saw her, there was something about her vaguely familiar... Do you recall the Jack Reamer trial?
Well, I remember it. That's about all. It happened, oh, some years ago.
Young Reamer came from a rather wealthy Chicago family. He was something of a black sheep. Got into one scrape after another. Expelled from college. Finally disinherited when he married.
Mm-hmm.
On New Year's Eve, 7 years ago, he shot and killed one of his wife's former admirers. He was convicted and later died in prison. During the course of the trial, his wife came in for considerable notoriety, quite naturally in view of the kind of woman she was.
How do you know the kind of woman she was?
Oh, everybody knew about her. The newspapers played it up in the most sensational manner. First when she married Reamer, and afterwards during the trial. Her name was Doris Fleming. Does that bring anything to your mind?
Oh, I wasn't particularly interested in the case.
Well, at any rate, Doris Fleming is running a shop here in River's End. She calls herself Harriet Niles.
Oh, are you trying to tell me you are... that you find a similarity between Harriet Niles and a picture you saw in the newspaper 7 years ago? Ah, rubbish.
Paul, what's your reason for trying to shield this woman?
Shield her?
I happen to know you've been acquainted with Harriet Niles for a good many years.
Oh, now, wait a minute.
To save you embarrassment, I ought to tell you I've gone into her history quite thoroughly. I know, for instance, that after her husband was sent to prison, she lived in Joliet. Her child was born there.
Well, what about it?
The physician who attended her was a Dr. Paul Christian.
Would you mind telling me the point of all this?
Harriet Niles and Doris Fleming are one and the same person. I can't understand why you attempt to deny it.
Well, I'm not denying it. But since you're so interested, yes. I've known Doris Fleming for almost 7 years. In fact, I suggest that she come here. Change her name to Harriet Niles.
So, you brought her here to River's End. Why?
When Doris Fleming's husband went on trial, she was the only one who stood by him. She moved to Joliet to be near him. When he was sent to prison, well, she stayed there until he died. Since then, she's been trying to earn a living for herself and for a little girl, trying to bring up Toby not to know what had happened. In every place he's gone, someone has made that impossible.
My dear doctor, I have no wish to injure the woman. Quite the contrary. Before I came to River's End, I lived in a little town of Mill Valley, California. As a lad and a young man, I was poor, dreadfully poor. I know what poverty is. My only feeling toward Doris Fleming is one of deepest compassion for her and her child. How old is the child?
6 years old.
Probably still young enough not to have been harmed. But how long is that going to hold true? How long before she finds out her mother's background, who and what her father was? The very thing Doris Fleming has been trying to avoid is bound to happen. Don't you agree?
Yes, if she continues to run into meddlers like you.
Calling me harsh names won't save the situation, no. There's only one solution. She must give the child up.
Give up the baby? Why, you... You don't know what you're talking about.
Please don't think I've reached such a conclusion hastily. I've thought about it for a long time. I've decided there isn't any other way.
Oh, I see. You've decided. Just why have you appointed yourself to deal with this matter?
When a man sees his duty as clearly as I see this, he hasn't any choice. I came here in a spirit of friendliness, seeking your help. I thought you might explain to the woman, get her to give up her child voluntarily, for child's own good.
Well, you may see that as your duty. I don't see it as mine.
It is your duty, whether you see it or not. I'll guarantee the little girl will have everything a child should have.
Except the mother.
The girl is only 6 years old. She'll soon forget her mother. And it's better so, considering the woman's history.
John, I've always been kind of ashamed of myself because for some reason I've never liked you. Well, I'm not ashamed any longer.
You don't know how that hurts me, Paul. But the soul of a little child is much too precious for me to let my personal feelings stop me. If you refuse to help, then I shall go to the town authorities and get them to take official action.
Will you please get out of this office?
After all, both Mrs. Potter and myself are not without influence among the good people of River's End. And I know public opinion will be aroused when I make the case clear.
Will you please get out?
Good morning, Paul.
Paul Christian. Dr. Paul Christian there. He's pretty upset at that guy. That guy's a kind of a jerk.
Well, you would know about that.
That's the first portion of Dr. Christian, starring Gene Herschelt from December 26, 1937, sponsored by Vaseline. Yeah, and I think Vaseline was the sponsor the whole time.
I think it's
time.
Just the way you say it.
Vaseline.
You like kind of emphasize each syllable.
And then there's a word that sounds like Vaseline. It's called vacillate.
That is true.
Right? Pretty good, Alisa.
Well, there's actually a word within good. Vaseline, which is vase.
Vase, yeah, and line.
Right.
There's line also.
That's true.
Right?
Yes.
Yeah. And there's as and in.
Well, those are little prepositions. We're not going to worry about those.
Let's take a quick break. Then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater. Hey, Roger.
Yes?
You know why there's no traffic out there right now?
Why is there? Well, I didn't because say there was no traffic.
You said
there's no delays.
You said, yeah.
Basically, no traffic.
Clear.
All clear. You want to know why?
Why?
It's almost 2 o'clock in the morning.
Now, there's people out there.
Huh?
There are people out there who are coming home from night shifts.
We're going to be out there pretty soon.
Yeah, I know.
There's people out there in the nightclubs on Ontario. They like that street.
Yeah. They double park. I'm so sick of these double parking people.
Here we go.
I'm so sick of the...
Look what you started.
Tim, I knew what I was doing.
Tim out there knows what I'm talking about. Tim, our police officer friend, he knows what we're talking about. These double parkers, Tim, give it to them good.
You know what?
They double park.
They're... Carl,
give
you
him
know
four
what?
Or five tickets.
Tim, don't listen to Carl.
Give him four or five tickets.
Wait a minute. Wait. Hold on.
No, you
are you
wait.
Talking about? Are you talking about the people double parking on Ontario?
He is, but you know
excuse
what?
Excuse me, Carl.
What?
Those are the firefighters.
No, they're not.
Yes, it's right out in front of the fire station.
No. Roger.
There's like this nightclub by the highway
it's a
when we go on.
They park. They let
on
their girlfriends
sides.
Out. They
but
let
you know what, Tim?
Picking up people.
I'm back to Tim. Don't listen to Carl.
Yeah,
the least of our problems in
Tim
life
and
is
I
double
bonded.
Parking.
Listen,
wait
Tim and
second.
I bonded. We knew these same.
Wait a second.
We guessed the Papillon question together.
The least of our problems in the city of Chicago and surrounding areas is
double parking. True.
So let me just be
but
clear that he's
the
out there doing
parkers.
Big stuff out there. Parking doesn't even rank.
Yeah.
Well, because they took your spot, so that's probably...
Yeah, because Carl wanted to pull over and run into the nightclub for a little while.
Yeah, right.
4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 12 parking tickets. I'd be like... If I was a police officer and someone double parked, I'd say, okay, sir, mind stepping out of your car. Sir or madam, mind stepping out of your car. I'd find like 12, 14 things to give him a ticket
You'd make a great cop.
I know. I would be like Beretta.
Wow.
You can't do the time. You can't
do
the time.
Crime.
Whatever.
It's crime.
Whatever it is. You can't do the time. Don't do the crime. Whatever. I'd be like Beretta.
Thank goodness you know your old-time radio.
Yeah. That's right.
Jeez.
I'd have a cockatoo on my shoulder.
Uh-huh.
And I had my 38 snub.
Uh-huh.
That's what he carried, a 38 snub. He had his raspberry beret on his head, right? He was
that's
a Prince
song.
Fan. He was
that's
a Prince
a song.
Fan.
Yeah.
Like, what? And look who played this part, Tony Blake. Look what happened to him.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, it's weird, isn't
Robert
it?
Blake. Tony Blake. Blake.
Oh, wasn't it Robert
it's
Blake?
Robert
yeah.
Blake
is right.
Well, you were thinking of Tony Danza.
Tony, yeah.
Oh, no, that's
not. No, I like Tony Danza. He's in a new show on Netflix. Yeah, he's on a new show. I like Tony Danza.
That's good.
The train of thought on this show.
I know.
You know what? It went off the
tracks.
But at
least
off
he's not
tracks.
Singing. He's not singing.
Next week,
we're going to start singing.
Next week, I'm going to sing.
We're going to do some musical memory next week, but we'll talk more when we have time.
Okay. Yeah, all right.
Musical memory.
Well, we are listening to Dr. Christian. This is a broadcast from 1937. It's called The Doris Fleming Case. Here's the conclusion now to Dr. Christian.
Hello, Dr. Christian.
Well, hello, Harriet.
Oh, I had no idea it was so late. I came as soon as I could. I suppose Judy has gone home long since.
Hmm? Mm-hmm. Judy is on a vacation.
Oh, is she? I hadn't heard. Where'd she go?
Where does everybody go these days? Hollywood.
Well, well, she'll have plenty to tell when she comes home.
She'll have plenty to tell me when she finds out I haven't sent out these bills she left.
Let me do it for you. I'd love to help.
Oh, some of them are not worth sending out. This one to John Potter, for example. John got a piece of jute in his eye when he was a young man. It caused an infection. The eye still bothers him occasionally. Oh, this bit is for prescribing an ordinary eye wash. I can't charge him for it.
You'll never make any money that way.
Oh, speaking of money. How was your Christmas business?
Wonderful.
Good.
Oh, it was a swell idea of yours, putting in the gift. And just think, this time last year I was in Minneapolis wondering what was going to become of us. You can't imagine what all those years were like. Walking the streets, looking for a job. Knowing if you found one, you couldn't keep it. That you'd have to leave and go someplace else. Oh, it's beautiful to be settled and have a home and feel that you're safe. Safe. I think that's the loveliest word in the world.
Harriet, Have you ever asked the Remus for help?
No. Why should I? I've always been able to get along.
I know, but Toby's growing up now, and, well, she's going to become more and more expensive. Well, she'll soon be wanting to entertain her friends and have nice clothes, and, well, the Remus ought to help. She's Jack's child as well as yours.
I don't want their help.
Well, you shouldn't let a little foolish pride stand in the way.
And they wouldn't help me if I did ask. The Remus hate me. Why, they disowned Jack for marrying me. When he was sick in prison, they didn't even come to see him or write to him. Why, they didn't even write when he died.
Well, 7 years might have made a great difference. They might have forgotten they hated you.
I haven't forgotten.
Don't you think you ought to give them a chance to make amends?
What chance did they give me? The chance of starving, that's all. I don't want to talk about it. I'll be able to look after Toby. Give her the nice friends and the pretty clothes myself. The shop will take care of that.
Yes, but suppose something happens to the shop.
What?
Suppose you can't go on with it.
What could happen?
Well, businesses sometimes fail, you know.
Oh, but...
Oh, come in.
I heard you talking in here, took the liberty of knocking.
Oh.
I realize I'm not welcome. I assure you I'm not here because I want to be.
Shall I go, Dr. Christian?
No, please stay.
Whatever you have to say, John, we can talk about some other time.
As long as the young lady is here, why not talk about it now?
Because I don't wish to.
I'm afraid that's not a very good reason.
It suits me.
Paul Christian, why haven't you enough courage to face the situation? Don't you realize evasion will get you nowhere?
I realize more and more what kind of a person you are. Psychiatrists have a word for you. It isn't a pretty, very pretty one.
We're wasting time. I've given you your opportunity, Paul. You haven't seen fit to take advantage of it. Fortunately, I am strong enough to assume the burden alone. Mrs. Nile?
John.
Dr. Christian informs me that you are Doris Fleming.
Oh, he told you? Oh, no.
Harriet, listen to me. I only told him when
I see now. That's why you wanted me to go to the Remus. Why, you talked about the shop failing.
Oh, he found it out by himself. I only
That's
tried...
That's true. And I convinced Dr. Christian it was useless to lie to me as I had completely investigated your case.
But why? Why? What difference does it make to you who I am?
I don't feel it's necessary to explain that.
Mr. Potter evidently takes his instructions directly from heaven. Or maybe he gives them.
Dr. Christian is being sarcastic because he doesn't like me. He knows I've not the slightest notion of harming you.
You won't tell anyone?
There's no reason why I should. Doris Fleming, I want to help you.
Help me?
Yes. I know how you struggle to keep your child from learning about your past life. I want to show you the way.
Oh, but I've already found it. Well, you and Dr. Christians are the only ones who know about me. I have a little shop here. I'm very happy. And the past is behind me.
Sooner or later, River's End will find out about you.
But I don't see how, unless...
They found out in the other places you've lived... No, you can never escape from your past. It's chained to you with a chain which cannot be broken. But your child can escape if you'll give her up.
Give up Toby?
We'll find a suitable home for her. I'll make all the arrangements. Help you in every way I can.
But you're crazy.
I'm not concerned with what you think about me. I'm only interested in the child. You'll have to give her up.
Who says I do?
Oh, this has gone far enough.
I say so.
I'm not taking orders from you. Who do you think you are?
You'd better be careful. You're a willful, headstrong woman. A person in your position could well display a little humility.
You're not going to take my baby away from me. You or anybody else. Do you hear? You or anybody else.
Harriet.
You claim to love your child, and yet you're willing to have its life linked up with you and a father who is a wastrel and a murderer.
Harriet.
I call upon you to witness, Dr. Christian. I tried to help her, and she struck me. Struck me like the common woman she is. We can do without her sort in River's End. Doris Fleming, I'm giving you a week to get out of town. 1 week!
Oh, why did you strike him? You shouldn't have done that. Don't you see it put you so much in the wrong?
I couldn't help it. He can't drive me away. He can't. You won't let him. You won't let him, will you?
The next scene in our story of Dr. Christian takes place in a room in Harriet Niles' home behind the dress shop. It is a pleasant room, the shades drawn now and the lights burning. In the center of the floor are several suitcases and a trunk.
You want this coat here put in the trunk, Mrs. Niles?
Yes. Oh, no, wait a minute. Pack the other one. Toby will wear this one.
Where are we going, Mama?
To Peoria, darling.
When?
Day after tomorrow. Oh, is there room in the small suitcase for these slippers, Anna?
I think I can make some room.
Well, put them on top so I can get them out on the train.
Yes.
How long will we be away, Mama?
I don't know, Toby.
Are we coming back?
No. Not ever.
But why?
Now, it's time to go to bed now.
Why aren't we coming back? Don't you like River's End?
Now, you better run along, Toby. It's almost 8 o'clock.
You told me you liked River's End. You told me we wouldn't move anymore.
I know, dear.
I don't like moving. As soon as I find some little girls to play with, we always move. Isabel and Betty Jean have never moved. They've lived here all the time. Why do we have to move?
Oh, please, Toby. Mother's so tired. Anna will get you ready for bed now. I'll be in soon and hear you say you're now Eileen's.
Yes, sure. It's about time for young ladies to go to sleep now.
Mama, why do I say different now Eileen's from Betty Jean?
Well, they're not different.
Yes, they are. I only say God bless Mama. And Betty Jean says God bless Mama and Papa.
Oh, Anna, will you put her to bed, please?
But why, Mama? Why don't I say it the same as Betty Jean?
Dear, I'll answer it. You take Toby and get her undressed, Anna.
Yes, ma'am, I will. Come, Toby. Come
night, on. Mama.
Good night, dear.
I thought I'd drop in for a little while here. Yes?
Oh, yes, come in.
I got a letter today from William Johnson about buying the shop. He says he might be interested in a month or so. But now, if you could find someone to run it for you until you...
No.
Oh, but it's foolish to walk away and leave a going business.
Well, maybe I won't leave. Maybe I'll send Toby away.
Oh, no. You won't do that.
Mr. Potter was here again this afternoon.
Well, if he bothers you again, call the police. After all, there is a law against blackmail.
What good would it do to tell the police? It would only mean a scandal, and then everybody would find out.
Well, let them find out. Face it. Have it over with. You know, when I was a very little boy, I used to think there was something horrible hiding underneath the cellar stairs. I didn't know what it was. I only knew I was dreadfully afraid of it. I would do anything to keep from going down these steps. And one day I had to go, and I found out there wasn't anything at all. You see, so many of our fears are like that. When we face them, well, they aren't there.
Oh, I'm not afraid for myself. But I can't let Toby's life be like mine. I've failed in everything else, but I won't fail in that.
Well, we'll find out some way.
No, there's only one way out. Mr. Potter's right. Oh, I've tried to make myself believe I could get away from it. If I could only go far enough, I could escape. But it never works. I know that now.
Oh, my dear.
I've got to give Toby up. I've got to give her up. My baby.
Don't give up yet. Something might happen to change everything.
Nothing can happen to change the past. You're chained to it with a chain which never can be broken. Only it can be broken. Death can break it.
Harriet.
I put Toby to bed, Mrs. Niles. You want me to finish up packing the trunk?
No. No, Anna. Just pack Toby's things in a suitcase.
Well, Paul, I'm glad you changed your mind and sent for me.
Sit down, John. Harriet tells me you found a place for Toby.
In a home in Colorado, a charitable institution managed very efficiently. You'll have to be an exception made to the rules for admittance, but Mrs. Potter has friends on the board, and I think it can be arranged.
Oh, but Colorado, why does it have to be so far away?
You know the answer to that question. If it were any nearer, she'd be running to see the child at every opportunity. Our entire purpose would be thwarted. Doris Fleming must never see the little girl again.
Oh, John, that's cruel.
Is it cruel to try to save a child's soul?
Oh, it wouldn't hurt if once in a while...
That's out of the question.
John, Harriet has done everything you asked her to do. Everything. Surely in this one thing you can be lenient.
My dear Paul, why do you persist in putting this on a personal basis? I bear no malice toward the woman. It's simply a duty to be done.
Oh, but think it over for a little while.
There is nothing to think over. The matter is settled.
John, before a doctor can cure an ailment, he has to know the cause. If he doesn't know the cause, he has to look for it.
I'm afraid I don't see the analogy.
In going over my books, I came across a chart for treating your eye.
So? How much was it? I never received a bill.
Oh, never mind that. But I believe you told me you got a little piece of jute in your eyes some years ago, and it caused an infection.
Yes, in the jute factory where I worked when I was a young man.
And that was in Mill Valley, California?
Yes. Why?
Well, it's this way, John. No man would act the way you've been acting without some cause. Something must have occurred to you to make you what you are.
I haven't time to continue this absurd discussion.
So I wrote to the town where you worked as a young man. Funny, nobody seemed to remember you. Or the jute mill either.
It's probably closed. That happened years ago.
Yes, but there was a jute mill nearby. In the California State Prison.
I've got to go. I'm busy.
Oh, I think yet you better stay for at least a little while, John.
I don't know what you're insinuating, but whatever it is, it's a lie.
Well, I have a report right here. You see, others can play at this investigation game, too.
It's a lie. I tell you a lie. I wasn't in prison.
The report is from the state of California. I'm sure it's correct, but if there's any doubt, well, I can turn it over to the proper authorities for check.
No, no, wait. Don't do that. It'll ruin me.
Then you were in prison.
Yes. Yes, I was, but I was framed.
That's what they all say. How soon can you be ready to leave town?
Leave town?
I think River's End could do without an ex-convict.
I can't leave River's End. My business is here. I've spent years building it. How can I explain? What can I tell my friends, my wife?
2 weeks should be ample time.
Oh, no, it's impossible. You're doing this for revenge.
I'm not looking for revenge, John. I'm doing this for the good of your soul.
Haven't I suffered enough? I spent 5 years in San Quentin. 5 years of misery, and because of a woman. A woman like Doris Fleming, who went scot-free.
A woman?
In San Francisco. She got me into it. She was as much to blame as I was, when I was the one that had to rot in prison.
And so because of that woman, you seem fit to punish Doris Fleming.
They're all alike. They deserve to be punished.
I'm beginning to understand your case.
But I won't bother Doris Fleming anymore. I swear I won't if you'll only let me stay here.
I'm sorry for you, John. Sorry for anyone who lets bitterness and hate live and grow until they influence everything they think and does.
Then let me stay. Don't send me away.
Last Sunday you said something about it being difficult to cure a sick soul. If I'm going to cure yours, I'll have to keep it under observation for a long, long time. Well, you can stay.
Paul.
Never mind, you better go now.
You won't tell anybody about
it? No.
And that report from California?
Here, you can have it. Tear it up if you like.
Why, this... This isn't from the prison board?
No. It's from the California State Department of Agriculture.
You've lied to me.
Oh, no, I never told you the report was from the prison board.
Just the same, you tricked me. Tricked me into confessing.
It was your confession that tricked you.
You made me believe the report applied to me.
Well, in a way, John, it does. It's a report on the common variety of pests.
Sunday at this same hour, the makers of Vaseline preparations will present another Dr. Christian story starring Gene Herschelt, famous screen actor in the title role. Gene Herschelt appears on this program through the courtesy of 20th Century Fox. This is Arthur Gilmore bidding you good afternoon for the makers of Vaseline preparations. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.
I have one monumental question to ask you, Lisa.
Yes, I'm listening, Carl.
What on earth are Vaseline preparations?
I don't care to answer that on the air.
Do you know what it is? Vaseline preparations?
Yes.
I have no idea what that means.
Okay.
So I would love to know.
Well, we'll
maybe
talk
tell
about
me
it.
When we play these commercials here, maybe you can enlighten
I'll fill you
me
in.
As to, well, no, don't fill me in because that doesn't, just enlighten me. How's that?
I will.
Would
I
that
always,
be better?
Carl, I always enlighten you. I
Whatever.
Enlighten you for 5 hours every
I
weekend.
I just need to know what a Vaseline preparation is.
Okay.
December 26, 1937, Doris Fleming is the name of that show. Gene Herschelt starring, as heard on CBS, sponsored by Vaseline Preparations.